Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Canadian novelist Miriam Taves has covered the subject of suicide in her work before.
Her second book, Swing Low, A Life, was a memoir written in her father's voice after he committed suicide in 1998. Tragically, a decade later, her sister also killed herself after battling depression for years and trying unsuccessfully to kill herself several times.
Taves' new novel, All My Puny Sorrows, is closely inspired by those latter events. Despite the difficult subject matter, the book manages to be darkly and ridiculously funny in places as well. After winning the Rogers Writing Trust Fiction Prize last week, it was runner-up for the Giller Prize, Canada's top literary award, last night. Taves will be in Milwaukee this evening to talk about her writing, but she joins us this morning via Skype from Toronto. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you so much for having me.
Do you feel like you had to reach a certain point as a writer to be able to tell this story the way you wanted to?
Yeah, I think that, possibly I felt at this point in my life, because I have been, I'm not a new writer. I'm not a young writer. I guess I felt confident in terms of the form, the fictional form of telling the story, which is so autobiographical. And, so I guess in that way, yeah, the experience that I've had helped me to feel confident about that decision.
Well, and I wondered if you had ever considered writing this story as a memoir, or what fictionalizing the story allowed you to do that you couldn't have done by purely writing about your sister and yourself.
I had very briefly thought about writing it as a memoir, but I'm a novelist. I'm a fiction writer. It's where I'm most comfortable. It's the form that I'm most comfortable with, where I feel most natural. And also the freedom of the novel, of writing fiction, is something that really appeals to me. And so I was able to, you know, although I used my experiences and that whole time that, with my sister, with her various attempts and then going back to our childhood and all of that stuff, I used that, all of that real life experience as the raw material for the book. But with fiction, I was able to impose tone and, you know, just kind of shape things in a way that hopefully, you know, would get even closer. And this is a cliche, I guess, but get closer to a type of truth. And so, I didn't think long about writing a memoir.
Do you think you could be funnier in writing it as fiction than you could have if it had been a memoir?
Oh, well, that was something that I was very concerned about, the tone, because it's such a dark subject and I wanted readers to feel confident. I wanted them to have faith in me that they would be able to take my hand and we would go and move through dark, dark places and come out in a place that was less dark and even hopeful. So part of that maintaining or creating that tone was definitely, you know, having lighter or comic scenes. In a memoir, I suppose that would have existed because only drawing on life, I guess the comedy is a sort of organic thing that arises from the situation, from the dialogue, from the characters themselves. So it would have been there in a memoir, hopefully. But I think that, again, like you say, with a fictional format, you know, you can embellish, you can exaggerate, you can shape, you can move things around to create the best comic scene.
Speaking of cliches, I mean, it seems like something of a cliche to ask if writing this book was therapeutic, but there it is. Let me ask that question anyway.
I would say no, but that might simply be because I'm not sure even how I define therapeutic. I mean, for me, because it's what I do, because it's how I make sense of the world, writing is how I make sense of the world. And it's how I can sort of impose a type of order on the chaotic events just of life. I think that as a result of doing that, as a result of just doing what I do, which is basically, you know, writing fiction, I feel good. I feel better. I feel calmer. I feel like, okay, you know, I've crafted narrative from this. So in my mind, my anxious little mind, that makes me feel better. But in terms of, you know, is it therapeutic in terms of getting over or achieving some sense of closure, a thing that I don't actually believe in, you know, with my sister's death? No. When I'm writing the book, I'm able to keep her alive in my imagination, and that's a great thing. But at the same time, when I'm finished writing the book, I'm still left with the loss, the sadness, grief. As I'm sure you know, we've all lost people does subside with time, but I don't ever stop thinking about my sister, and you know, not for long periods of time. So this is a really, really ridiculous, convoluted answer to your question, but it's basically yes and no.
Well, and even the use of the term being over it, it seems like you would never want to be over it.
Yeah, exactly. I feel that, and I've experienced this, the grief that you have when you feel that you've stopped grieving. It's like another little period of mini grief. It's a separate thing. You think to yourself, I thought to myself, for instance, when my father died, also from suicide, I thought, oh no, I've stopped thinking so much about my dad. I've stopped remembering, you know, the sharp definition of my memories with him is, you know, it's fading. And so I guess that's a good thing. That's a necessary thing. That's how hopefully we're wired in order to survive, to go on, to deal with all of the losses that we all deal with. But at the same time, it's a little kind of a panicky feeling because you feel, oh no, this is another loss. How am I going to remember if I don't remember? I don't remember. And of course you never forget. You don't forget everything, but everything becomes a little bit more muted. And essentially that is a good thing. It's just, there's a little period of having to accept that.
Well, and so what happens when you tell that story and it goes out into the world? Does it cease to be the same kind of personal story, or is it a personal story but it doesn't belong to you in the same way once it's between the covers and on people's shelves?
Yeah, I mean, everybody takes the story and you know, will do with it what they want or need to do with it, and it becomes a part of their thinking, their consciousness. But it's and they you know, they can impose their own story on my story. I think that, I mean, there are so many things that happened in real life between my within my family, in dealing with my sister's illness, and also the good times, and that of course aren't in the book. Otherwise, it would be an endless, it would be the biggest book in the world. But so, you know, so I had to choose carefully, and in terms of, you know, what would make the most entertaining, moving, thought provoking, hopefully, narrative. And so there's a lot that isn't in there that's just in me still. And I like that feeling. The stuff that's in the book, those are memories that I still have, of course, but there is something sort of like, it's not burying things when you put them in a book, but it's just kind of putting them in a place that's manageable.
There was a magazine article not long ago that contends that in writing this book, you are nudging the conversation forward about assisted suicide. Do you think that's the case? Do you feel comfortable being in that position?
Well, again, the answer to that is yes and no. I feel if this book can be one small part of that conversation and can nudge, like you say, or like they said, the conversation in that direction so that we can think about it. It's such a complex issue, obviously, the idea of assisted suicide. And I know there's a lot of resistance to it, but I also know that there's a lot of minds are opening towards it, for good reason. So, I feel that I'm not a spokesperson. I'm not a lawmaker. I'm not a medical professional. So all I have is, you know, all I have is the, my lived experience. And all I know is that if that option had been available for my sister, for instance, and she had wanted it to be available, she would not have had to have died violently and alone. There was no reason for us to think that she wasn't going to be successful. She had told us enough times, she had tried enough times. She was rational and clear. And so yes. So on the one hand, I feel like, yeah, I do, I can, and I'm willing to be a part of that conversation. But on the other hand, I'm very, very aware of my own shortcomings in terms of, you know, talking about it fully with all of the information that one needs.
There's a point in the book where Yoli, your narrator, rails against someone who uses the term "die by one's own hand," and that's really still how a lot of people talk about it, in these kind of euphemistic terms.
Absolutely. It's such a, I mean, and that's so understandable. The idea, I mean, I certainly, before my father took his life and again, I just did it before he committed suicide, before he killed himself in 1998, you know, the idea of suicide, obviously I was aware of it existing, but it wasn't something that I thought about. It wasn't something that I was drawn to. I didn't want to necessarily see movies or read books that dealt with it, because it's terrifying. It's awful to think of a person being in such crisis, you know, feeling such despair that that life has become unbearable, and that they kill themselves, that they destroy themselves. And then to think of our loved ones in that position, it's so scary. And yet, by, you know, not talking about it is more terrifying. And so I do understand the euphemisms that have sprung up around the subject, and people are people who don't, you know, who really misunderstand, I think, or I should say, there are people who, well, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be critical, but it's the, you know, people who still really can't quite muster up any compassion for somebody who kills themselves. I mean, it's they think of it as a weakness or as a selfish, dramatic gesture. And so, you know, I don't agree with that, obviously. And I think that as we talk about mental illness, as we talk about the subject of suicide directly, without euphemism, we can kind of move away from that attitude.
And of course, those are all issues that Yoli is continually grappling with in this story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Elf is determined to die, and Yoli is determined to keep her alive. And at some point in the story, Yoli has to ask herself, you know, how do I love my sister? How do I love somebody who wants to die, who's telling me, begging me? And then what is the definition of love within that context?
This is a dramatic gear shift here, but we're having this conversation on Monday, and by the time it airs and you come to Milwaukee on Tuesday, you and the world will know whether it has been awarded the Giller Prize, the top Canadian literary prize. This must be exciting, but at the end of the day, I would imagine you would rather not have had the impetus to have written the novel.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. The fact that it's been shortlisted is, of course, an honor, and I'm grateful. If it means that more people become aware of the book and are willing to read it, then that's fantastic. But of course, it's a book, and I was talking about this with my mother. I talk about it with my mother a lot. She lives with me here in Toronto. You know, and it's obviously a book that I would have preferred hadn't had to have been written, but certainly. So it's a difficult. I feel a lot of ambivalence in terms of celebrating this book, but at the same time, you know, I'm grateful.
Well, and so writers, I mean, you live in Toronto. Your mom lives with you. Going to a gala award ceremony can't be a normal everyday event for you.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, it's quite. I mean, you have to take it all with a grain of salt. Again, I'm grateful to have been shortlisted and to have the opportunity to go. But this whole idea of thinking about dresses and hair and makeup is quite forced. And, you know, I'm just hoping not to fall over, basically. But you're right. No, this doesn't, and that's why I want to enjoy it too. I really want to just have fun, regardless of what happens. Because every writer knows that this sort of thing does not happen every day, hardly ever in a lifetime. And you know, very 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 soon I'll be back in my small room by myself for 3 or 4 years. So I hope to enjoy myself today.
Well, I hope you enjoy yourself a lot, and I hope you enjoy your trip to Milwaukee. Miriam Taves, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Miriam Taves is the author of 6 novels, the latest of which is the award-winning All My Puny Sorrows. It's been out since April in Canada, and despite the fact that it is not officially released in the United States until next week, she'll read from it tonight at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. We reached her at her home in Toronto.
We'll take another break now, and when we return, we'll work to dispel some common myths about nature and find out if frogs freeze in the winter. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.
Ribbit.